This Sunday Show with Ed Finn with Germany.travel. Feel inspired by Germany. Your adventure awaits.
Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome to the Sunday Show. My special guest this evening is number one best-selling author, Vanessa O'Loughlin, and owner, of course, people might know you from writing.ie as well, Vanessa. Now, that's just a few of the many things that you're involved in, but we can start off with those. Some of the people will know you as Sam Blake, of course.
Indeed.
And you've been nominated for a fabulous UnPost Award as well. Vanessa, tell us about that.
Yeah, so the UnPost sponsored the Irish Book Awards, which is the big event in the Irish book calendar. And there's loads of different categories. Lots of amazing people have been nominated, but I have been shortlisted in Crime for Crime Novel of the Year as Sam Blake. So I'm thrilled.
That's wonderful. And of course, esteemed writers as George R.R. Martin, I know, has won an UnPost Award as well. I got to chat to him the day after that. And so it really is a big deal.
Oh, it is. It's the biggest thing in the Irish calendar in terms of books. And the event, which is the, I think on the 23rd of November this year, it's usually on television. And it's like our big Christmas party, to be honest, the author's Christmas party. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. The book is Remember My Name, but it's some stiff competition. Steve Kavanagh's up there too. And Catherine Ryan Howard I think she's in Crime too. She's up for Author of the Year as well. And there's an amazing, amazing array of authors. It's going to be great.
Of course, I mean, Crime, I mean, we've seen the explosion, Vanessa, in podcasts recently as well. And the crime genre is huge there. In books, it's huge. When you, as a young girl living in Hertfordshire, did you always want to be a crime writer?
I think I always knew I was going to be a writer. Well, I didn't know I was going to be a writer. I knew I wanted to write a book. I've always loved creative writing. I remember sitting down in an A-level exam, I think it was, and having to write a creative piece about bees. I still have a very vivid recollection of that. But I didn't really know when or how, what it was going to be about. And my husband went sailing across the Atlantic in 1999. And I was at home on my own for 8 weeks. And I had an idea for a book. And that was crime at that stage, because I was reading a lot of crime. And I think it's really important for writers to read what you write, because then you understand the nuances of the book and the way, you know, plot, I suppose, pans out. And I'd got really into reading sort of people like Michael Connelly and Lee Child, and read it like everything, and was really, really into crime. And yeah, I had an idea for a whodunit, if you like, a murder story, which I started writing, and literally the bug bit. It was the case of, you know, when you sit down to write, and you know, it's 12 o'clock and you put your head down, and when you look up again, you think it's 5 minutes later and it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, then you know that it's something's working, the magic's happening. And obviously I thought that book was going to be absolutely amazing and was going to storm the bestseller lists. So I duly sent it out absolutely everywhere, and it was rejected absolutely everywhere. I made all the rookie mistakes with it, but it was a great way to start, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, for people that start writing, I mean, you often hear so many people attending advice, you know, just sit down and write, and I know it sounds great, but I mean, it's a lot harder than that. I mean, obviously, for you, did you have your own process? I know, for example, when I spoke to our famous George R., he is an old tri-star, and he was disconnected to everything. And I mean, every writer probably has their own process, do they?
Yeah, I think they do. I think creativity is unique, and that's why everybody's book is different. And it takes a while to develop that process. I mean, it takes a while for you to find your voice as a writer. We tend to sit down, and you know, I did a degree in history and English and a bit of business, and you know, had written essays for a long time, and obviously sat down thinking, this couldn't be that hard. I'm a reader, I can write a book. Then obviously discovered that there was quite a lot more to it than that. And there is a lot to the craft of writing, and lots of techniques that you have to learn. But yeah, I think part of learning those techniques is learning your own process and what works for you. And in the same way that creativity is unique, the way we write is unique. So you can talk to a whole load of different authors, and we all do things slightly differently. I mean, some of them do things very differently, but we all end up with 100,000 word, you know, commercial fiction book at the end of the day. So as a reader, you can't see the differences in that process, but certainly as a writer, yes, you have your own little ways of doing things.
And in terms of crime, right, what was it that attracted you to that? I mean, I know what you were saying there, your husband was sailing across the Atlantic. I mean, you were obviously, that was quite a nerve-wracking time for you, I'd imagine.
Absolutely. I was plotting him, literally. It was before, well, there were no mobile phones or anything then, you see. I could only talk to him through Porter I think it was Portishead Radio. So I had to put a book a call into the radio station. The radio then beamed it out to the boat, and then it came back on like a ship to shore thing. Anyway, it was very hit and miss. And I was plotting his course across the Atlantic on this huge big chart. I think I've always been interested in puzzles. I'm interested in people's secrets. I'm interested in what goes on behind closed doors, what people don't tell you when you meet them. That's really basically it. It's that. Basically, I'm very nosy, let's face it. All writers are very nosy. We like overhearing conversations. We like to know what's going on. And I'm very interested in, all the stuff that people don't tell you.
Yeah, like you're not like Maeve Binchy on the back of the bus.
Overhearing every conversation, absolutely. Nobody's safe.
That's brilliant. And, I mean, when did you decide that you were going to come then to live in Ireland?
When I met my husband, so I'm an import, really. So that was a long time ago. Literally came over here, moved into, we were living in Bray to begin with, and now we live in Kilmechanic. And it was fantastic. I was working in marketing, shopping centre marketing in the UK, and I got to the point where I was just about to change job when I met him. So it seemed like a sensible thing to do, says she, who arrived in a country then with no shopping centres, or I think there was one shopping centre. Yeah. And so no job for a long time, but I did all sorts of funny things. And I think that's been, being a writer, the more different types of things you do, it builds towards everything experiences. So I was a tour guide up in Glendalough for a bit, and I worked for a jewellery company, and then I worked in event management, and I did lots of different things. Yeah.
Wonderful. So living at the foot of the Wicklow Mountains, very inspirational and creative, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Now, just to go back to your debut novel, right, Little Bones, launching the best-selling Cat Connolly trilogy. Can you just, for people that may not know your books yet, can you just go through and tell us how you started with this, because it's really very interesting, I think, that trilogy.
So Cat Connolly came to me. I think this was the fifth book that I'd written, so imagine there's four more before that I've been merrily sending out. And Cat Connolly actually didn't come first, the idea came first. And basically what happens in the book is that somebody, Cat, finds the bones of a baby hidden in the hem of a wedding dress. And what had happened was I'd seen this RTE documentary years and years ago. It was about a girl who'd left Ireland. She'd gone to Manchester. And when I researched it subsequently, I discovered she'd gone to work in a rubber factory. And she was pregnant when she left Ireland. It was one of the reasons for leaving. And she had the baby. She rented lodgings. So she was sharing a room with the daughter of the woman who owned the house. And she had the baby in the middle of the night, and nobody knew. And she literally took herself off to the bathroom and sorted herself out and came back, and the baby had died. And so she wrapped it up in a blue dress. I found all this in the court records afterwards, but a lot of it was on the documentary. Wrapped up in a blue dress and popped it in a suitcase and left it under her bed. And clearly she wasn't thinking very straightly at that stage. And she came back to Ireland and to confess to her parish priest what had happened. But in the meantime, the baby's body was discovered, as it would be, left underneath the bed, and she was one of the last people convicted in the UK for infanticide. So this story of this girl and this bedroom and this suitcase and the bait just stuck with me for so long. And then I was driving back from the airport once, this is many moons ago, before the M50 had been built, when there were 35 sets of traffic lights between my house and the airport. So it was a good old long drive, and it was a Sunday afternoon, it was lovely and sunny, and I put on the radio, and there was a documentary on RTE about a playwright who had written a play called The Country Dressmaker, which had saved the fortunes of the Abbey Theatre at the time. And he had died destitute in Cable Street, and he'd left all his plays in a suitcase and left them on his bed. And so the suitcases and the beds all connected in my head, and I came up with I was just thinking about this girl who'd been in the room, and how having a wedding dress, which is what The Country Dressmaker would have made for her, would have been the thing that's the one thing that she would have wanted potentially. And so I started thinking about it, and by the time I got back home, I don't even know how the bones ended up in the dress, but that's what I just had this idea about somebody finding bones in a wedding dress. And I didn't know until I was two-thirds of the way through the book why or how or quite all the details. But it revealed itself.
And that's very interesting, because it's almost like, I talked to a few writers about the muse descending, right? And it's quite interesting because it's almost a real thing, because, when you get an idea and something hits you, do you have the pen beside the bed and you write down something, or is it, because it's so difficult to know sometimes where you're going, or do you always have it plotted out?
Well, I think it's that collision. Stephen King, we were talking about Stephen King earlier. Stephen King talks about the collision of two unrelated ideas to make great story. And I think you always need more than one idea. So yeah, you start off with something. And for me, it lights a light bulb in my head. So I hear something or I'll see something. And it could be something really simple, like what's in somebody's trolley in Tesco's, or half a conversation, or that documentary in the radio documentary. And then they connect in your head, and they can be completely unrelated. So Remember My Name was started with me overhearing, well, not overhearing a conversation, but somebody not hanging up properly. And you know how you can hear all the rattling and stuff in the background when somebody doesn't put the phone down properly. And I just thought, wouldn't it be interesting if you overheard something that you really shouldn't overhear? And so in the start of Remember My Name, the book opens with a woman overhearing a telephone conversation. Her husband is on the other end, and somebody else who's in the room. I leave the rest to your imagination. You'll have to read the book. But then I was thinking a lot about, at the time, I was having a conversation with my agent actually about some of the big online retailers who have so much information about us because they know what we're buying. And, you know, some of these retailers, I won't name them, you can guess, their owner wants to go to space, just as a big clue. They want, you know, they know what cat food you buy potentially, or, you know, what clothes size you are, and, you know, what books you read. And, you know, they sell so many things that if somebody got hold of that data and started looking in to see what you were ordering, particularly if you're the type of person who's ordering some things that maybe you shouldn't have been ordering, then they could use that information. And I just thought, wouldn't that be interesting? So then the two things literally came together in my head. And I have, like, Cresta's husband. Cresta is over here's a telephone conversation. Cresta's husband is the one who owns a very big company and has a lot of data. And there is a very big data breach. And so part of the book is about what happens and how and why.
Yeah, very interesting. We can chat a little bit later about social media, because I know you have a lot of ideas and strong thoughts on that as well.
This Sunday Show with Ed Finn. With Germany.travel. Feel inspired by Germany. Your adventure awaits.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to the Sunday Show. My special guest this evening, Vanessa O'Loughlin, author, number one best-selling author, should I say. Vanessa, very interested to hear about this Reader's Club that you've set up now. I love joining things, right? But I'm terrible for sticking the pace. So this looks like what I might actually be able to enjoy. It sounds really interesting.
Well, I hope it's a fun one. So it's a Sam Blake Reader's Club. So it's all about Sam Blake, on the author side of things. And basically, I love connecting with readers. And I think we were just talking earlier about social media, and there's a lot out there on social, but you don't ever really get into or behind the scenes. And the idea of the Reader's Club is that people who read Sam Blake books and who enjoy them and who want to know more about sort of the process and how they come together could join the club. And I'm sending out a series of newsletters, not very many, because I'm not very good at doing them, and B, I don't want to clog people's inboxes, so there won't be hundreds, I can guarantee that. But to just talk about what I'm reading, what I'm watching, what's happening in the book world and at my end. So, you know, if there's anything exciting happening, I've got a fantastic new cover of the paperback coming out for Remember My Name, which I have here in front of me. I'm just going to give you a quick flash. Nobody can see this on radio, can they? This is terrible. But it's purple, and it's got purple sprayed edges.
It looks very, 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 very poignant, very Halloween-y.
Oh, totally. And just honestly, sprayed edges in the book world are just amazing.
Very nice.
I'm feeling very happy about that. So, yes, that's gone into the Reader's Club newsletter. And if I'm doing events and stuff, but I'm also planning to do some original events, particularly just for the Reader's Club. So actually already a book club emailed me this morning who want me to go down and talk to them, who are on the Reader's Club network. So so I'm available obviously to do events for them, but I want to set up some special events too for people, and they might be online or they might be in person. So the idea is that you can sign up, you get a free book in fact as well. So I wrote a book called High Pressure, which is a sort of a bridging book between the Kat Connolly series that we mentioned earlier and actually the psychological thriller standalones that I write now. And the character of Brioni, who is in Remember My Name, is also in High Pressure. So you get that as a free download. It's a digital book, and it's a thank you from me for people joining the club. But the idea is, just to bring readers together and give you an insight about much more of an insight than you get from social media. It's a bit more personal about me and the books.
Yeah, and I mean, what I love as well has been your strong female characters, like, you know, Keep Your Eyes on Me there. And I mean, The Dark Room hitting the bestseller list there in January 2021, staying on top 10 for over a month. And that was also shortlisted for the Irish Crime Novel of the Year award. So The Dark Room, I loved that. I mean, I think that's just give people an idea. Where did that come from, the inspiration for
the
that?
Dark Room. Well, do you know, it's funny.
A lot of people now would know Dark Room was for a whole other purpose,
reason, yeah.
Vanessa, which we would not be talking about here.
it's really interesting because when you talk about it, the inspiration for books, they're all really different. And actually, The Dark Room, I was sitting on a beach. Well, first of all, I'd roll back a bit. I'd been, a friend of mine is a printer and had printed some hairs, pictures of hairs on a map. And it was just one of the print things he printed. And it just really struck a chord with me. And, you know, I was talking about light bulbs going off and literally looked at these printed hairs on this map. Light bulb goes off. Oh, that's interesting. So that gets stored in the brain. Then I was in Cornwall. I go to Cornwall every year on holiday. And I was sitting on the sort of promontory thing. It's just above the beach. It's not on the beach. On a bit of rock. And daydreaming and just staring into space. And I just had this image of this woman jogging down the beach at low tide with a German shepherd jogging along behind her, which had dark hair and a ponytail. And I could just see her from behind, so I didn't even know what she looked like. And I just thought, that to me is like, this is the start of a story. This is something talking to me. And right opposite me across the river, because the beach is on the edge of a river, it's an estuary. There's this old tower, which actually it's a very crumbly old tower. It used to be the customs house jail, so the customs officer's jail. So they would have stopped the ships coming into the estuary and searched them. And if anybody had contraband or whatever, they would have been locked up in the jail. And apparently Bligh was locked up there for a bit too. And he was there for a week because it took a week for a messenger to get down to London to say, listen, he's with us, unlock him. So just an incidental thing there. But anyway, so I was sitting there on the beach. I had the image of the girl with the dog and was thinking about the hairs on the map. And then I went up to see a friend who makes tiles, beautiful tiles and ceramics in the village very close to where I was. And she had this tile with a hair on it. And I just thought, this has a hair thing going on here. This is really strange. And by the time I'd driven back to the house, I'd come up with the idea of a house called Hare's Landing. And literally where I was sitting on the beach, I was about 300 yards from Frenchman's Creek, Daphne du Maurier's Frenchman's Creek. And
wow.
Rebecca is my book. It's like that. It's the book that is, I just wish I'd written. I just, it's perfect in my eyes. And so the whole idea of Mandalay and this big country house and a house in trees. And I started thinking about this place called Hare's Landing. And then the tower was in the garden or was in the land on the edge of the estuary. And this girl was there and the dog was there. And I was thinking and started thinking about, you know, whose story is it and what's happened and why are they there and what sort of place is this? And so, yeah, came up with the idea of Hare's Landing being a country house hotel. And the girl is a girl called Caroline Kelly, who has come from New York. She's a journalist and she really needs a break. So she comes in January to Hare's Landing. And it's not even her dog. She meets this girl called Rachel, who's all got her own problems in London, who's also in Hare's Landing. And the dog is a dog called Jasper. that's how the story started. Very strange.
Amazing. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, I was talking to another writer a few months ago, and she told me also that she goes away a lot on her own. And it's very interesting. It's kind of resonant of some stuff that you're saying to me now here. It's almost like you have to sort of unclutter your mind. That's so interesting. Like we use the word serendipity, or we use the word, but how the symbolism there, you know, the way people see 11-11 and 11-11, you know, this,
yeah.
People go, what is that? What does that mean? You know, some people say, oh, it's just coincidence. But there seems to be something very interesting going on there.
It feels like magic, doesn't it? And you're so right about the unclutter your mind. I think as a writer, you learn to tune into your subconscious, because your subconscious is where the magic happens. That's where story comes from. And that's where all these weird bits that you collect, connect. So if it's, you know, if like the phone call and Remember My Name with the data, and then The Dark Room was the girl on the beach with the hairs, and Cat Connolly was the two documentaries and we had the bones. So there's always a couple of different things that come together, and you never know what bits are going to come together, because you're not really in control of them. It's just they sort of just collide, literally. You can imagine, like, you know, I don't know, atoms all banging together or something in your head. And yeah, I think as a writer, you really learn to tune into that. And that's part of the, I suppose it's part of the magic, but it's also part of the skill in understanding your own creativity, because we mentioned that earlier about process. And getting your antenna waggling and learning to hear, I think, is important.
Yeah, in a way, it's almost, in a way, sort of like psychic intuitiveness. Yeah. You know, it sounds a bit like
very
that,
odd.
You know?
It sounds very mad, doesn't it? I think that's why writers like talking to other writers, because it makes perfect sense to us. It sounds completely nuts to everybody else.
Because you live in a kind of a cerebral world as well. Mm. I mean, you live in a 200-year-old cottage with several cats, and I'm seeing now someone on a broomstick flying around the ceiling here, right? Now, but the interesting part about this is, and an occasional poltergeist.
Now,
fascinating, because I've down the years myself, I've gone runs a few haunted places, and I've always, you know, I get sort of senses of things. But that's interesting, the occasional poltergeist. What I mean, do you, are you a believer in that sort of stuff, or
well,
what's
it's,
your?
It's weird because I am, yes, and I would love to see a ghost. Well, I wouldn't love. Well, I would love to actually, just because I do believe in them, and I just think things go on. But I never have. Whereas my sister, who has no interest whatsoever in the supernatural and is the biggest skeptic ever, every single place she's ever lived in has been haunted, like in a big way. And it's very strange. Yeah, so they avoid me. Our poltergeist moves things around. And this sounds like, you just think, oh, that's, don't be stupid, Vanessa, you've lost things, or, you know, whatever, left the keys in the fridge. But it's actually, seriously, things move. And then they disappear completely, and then you go around looking around the whole house looking for them, and you go past the same location like four times, and then on the fifth time you get there and there it is sitting there right in front of you. And it doesn't just happen to me, it happens to the rest of the family too, so I know it's not me going mad.
No, it's very interesting. I mean, my dad died when he was 67, and he used to always send me a card for my birthday when I didn't live in Ireland. And I was back here one year, and I was just, I don't know, I went to the bookshelf to look at some book, and next thing a birthday card fell out.
Ooh. Oh,
on goodness. The floor of the, that was the day of my birthday, and I,
oh,
that really, like, as true as I'm saying, that, yeah, really, I was like, oh my, you know, that was a real, that you were talking about hairs earlier.
Yeah,
I had the
absolute
hairs. That was something that,
like,
yeah,
that, yeah.
And then I kind of started thinking, well, oh my goodness, there's something definitely, yeah, going on here.
I mean,
you know,
that didn't happen by accident.
Yeah,
yeah, no, I know. It's, yeah, well, we had it moved and stuff once when I was brushing my teeth. I was brushing my teeth in the bathroom, minding my own business as you do, and my moisturizer. I turned to look in the mirror, and when I turned back, my moisturiser had moved from the back of the sink to the toothbrush mug, like, was sitting in the top of it. And I was like, there is no way, even if I was...
Telepathy.
Do you know what I mean? Or drunk.
Not telepathy,
or,
telekinesis,
exactly,
isn't
who
that
does
it?
That? Nobody puts their moisturiser in the toothbrush mug. So I was like,
wow,
that was really strange. I was like, whoa, what's,
yeah,
going on?
Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Well, I mean, you know, for people that... I mean, I think when people read your books, they're going to really... They're going to get lost in that wonderful world of yours that in your mind,
so.
Which is, it was just really fascinating. And isn't that something that, I mean, I tried the Kindle, Vanessa, it just didn't work for me at all, right? It just doesn't have the feel for me now. A lot of other people love it because they don't have to carry around books. I think over COVID and everything, people kind of got back into reading again because they just had no choice, I suppose, in a way. They had to do something. But there's been a huge explosion again now in the whole writing. But it's in particular, the crime writing. Now, you're also on the board of the Society of Authors and the Crime Writers Association, and you founded Murder One. Am I correct about,
yeah,
that?
Yeah, indeed you are. Absolutely. The Crime Writing Festival. Yeah, we've just happened in October there. Yeah.
And I mean, is that something, I mean, when you guys all get together, right? I mean, that must be, but the imaginations obviously are like all there.
Well, it is hilarious. I have to say, the conversation crime writers have is quite different from anything anybody else would have. And I think if you overheard it, you could be quite worried, because we do talk about all sorts of funny things. Yeah. So, and I just have to say, there's a few spooks in the dark room too. Now you mentioned poltergeists. Yes, there's definitely some spooky goings on. That.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the occasional poltergeist in the cottage, yeah, but you haven't managed to see anything, but you've sensed it.
Oh, no, it's definitely, there's something there moving around, definitely. And
yeah.
Merlin, actually, one of my cats who you mentioned, is in the next book. So he has a very big role in The Mystery of Four, which is coming out in January.
Wow, fascinating. Merlin, I mean, this sounds, it's all sounding fantastic. Vanessa, we're going to talk now, I mean, in the next part, we're going to chat about writing tips, etc., because I think people would absolutely love to get some really wise knowledge from you on that. Is there one thing that stands out for you that you would say to people before we go for a bit of music that I would love to have known now that you, or like, you know, before you started writing, that would have saved you a lot of time, or, you know, when you were sending off books? Or is it just something you have to go through?
No, I think I would have known all of it. It would have been great, because I would have got there much quicker. I think that's why I set up writing.ie, and I run a writers club now. It's a writers group online called Writers Inc. It's a private Facebook group to really help people and coach people through that process, because it took me a long time to learn all these techniques, and you can do it quicker if you can go to the right sources and get the right information, listen to the right people. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favourite books is the one I was chatting to you before we went on air there, was about the Stephen King on writing.
Best book.
And it was amazing when you said to me that you thought that was the best, because
absolutely,
I just started reading it again, and he really has a no-nonsense approach, sort of this Orwell Hemingway tradition of, like, no-nonsense. But that book is really good, isn't it?
It's the best book on writing. It is literally the best book ever written about, and every single published writer, every single unpublished writer should have it. Every single published writer does have it on their shelf. And as I was saying to you earlier, it's the book that really tells you, teaches you about voice. So the one thing that publishers are looking for anybody who's sort of writing away at the moment is that they're looking for a unique voice. Everybody wants a voice that sounds different. So if you read a Sam Blake book, you're going to know it's Sam Blake as opposed to, say, Steve Kavanagh or Lee Child or whoever. You know from the way I write that it's me. And that's quite hard to sort of get a handle on, really, I think, as a new writer. I remember somebody saying about voice years ago and me thinking, what on earth are they talking about? But when you read that book, you feel like you know Stephen King. When you finished it, you feel like he's talking to you personally and he draws you into the story. And that's what really, really great voice is all about. So it's a fantastic book.
This Sunday show with Ed Finn with Germany.travel. Feel inspired by Germany. Your adventure awaits.
Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to the Sunday show with my special guest, Vanessa O'Loughlin. Vanessa, very interesting there talking about writers finding their voice. Now, you have written 7 books. Just to give people an idea, kind of how long would it take you to write a book, Vanessa?
I think as a new writer, and certainly when I was starting out, you need to allow a year. And a lot of published writers now would take a year to write a book, through the process of sort of coming up with the idea and then writing the thing, and then the rewriting is absolutely crucial. So when you write a book, you don't write just, it's not that, you don't write a book and that's it. Your first draft is really just a first draft, and it's a thing nobody should ever see. And it's, you know, it's like the undercoat. So really what you're trying to do in a first draft is just really find the story. And then you go back and you're polishing and you're looking at words and you're looking at moving things around and developing bits of story and changing things and adding characters and maybe taking them out and doing all that other stuff, that work that is sort of like the jigsaw puzzle, I suppose. But yeah, so the first draft, but I write quite quickly. So for me, it probably takes me about 3 months to come up with a good solid first draft. But I plot quite a lot. So I like to know what's going to be happening in a book. Well, I'm varying, actually. I started off plotting in meticulous detail. So when I did Little Bones, that was really clearly plotted. And I create this chart, which is basically a thing of columns, and it's like 6 columns across, and I create 30, a set of 30. So in my head, I tend to think that each chapter is going to be about 3,000 words. And in order to have a whole book, I need 30 of those, so that's 90,000 words, and that's what we're aiming for in adult fiction. In fact, I never write chapters of 3,000 words. I tend to write them around the 1,000 mark. But once I've got that 30 mapped out, I know that I've actually got a book and I've got a full story and I can see where the middle's going to be and all that type of thing. And then when I come to write it, it's a very instinctive process, and so I'd be adding bits and things would be happening that were never in the plot. And quite often I never go back actually to look at it. I just keep writing and go right the way through. But yeah, that takes me about 3 months.
And the rewriting, I mean, there's things that you have to really watch out for, I guess, is because that's something I think people would be, there'd be a bit of a grey area there, and people would be, of course, when you're just starting out, you'd be wondering, like, what do you leave in? What do you take out?
Absolutely.
Or
yeah.
Polishing things.
Yeah, I've actually got, on writing.ie, I have an article, I was just looking at it this morning, called Tips for Writing the Second Draft. So particularly people who are doing, if they're thinking of doing NaNoWriMo, which is a thing that happens in November about now, where you aim to write a book, I think it's 50,000 words through the whole of November. What you end up with is a very unpolished first draft, which is great because that's what you want. But then it's a case of what do you do next. So yeah, that article, if you just put Sam Blake into writing.ie, you'll find those tips. But essentially it's going right the way back through it, right from the very beginning. So you're going back through, and first of all, you're looking for story to make sure you've no plot holes, that the story, you know, pans out properly. You're also looking at things like, I remember when I wrote Little Bones, I suddenly realised there's a subplot in it with Tony and Emily, and I suddenly realised that every single conversation they had was in their bedroom. And I thought, that's not going to really work. So I had to move some to their kitchen.
It would be great if it was a play.
Well, exactly. Sort of one, yeah.
Very easy set.
Yeah, exactly. So I just thought, yeah, well, that's not really going to work. But you don't realise those things when you're writing, because there's a lot you don't see when you're writing, because you're so in the a story, and literally what you're ending up with is usually something that's around 100,000 words, and that's a lot of story to be managing, so you can't really hold it all in your head. So you're going through that second draft and the rewriting process, you're looking for things like making sure there's no plot holes, making sure everything flows, maybe adding bits, maybe adding twists. In one book I changed the killer, so I got to the end and then I changed the last 10,000 words because I decided this was too predictable. It wasn't even that predictable, but I just thought, no, I need to change this. So that caused quite a lot of rewriting because obviously had lots of things had to change all the way through. And then you're looking at things like dialogue. Does the dialogue work? Does it sound like dialogue? Does it sound like people actually talking to each other? Is it moving the plot forwards? You're looking at things like repeated words. I'm desperate for two things. Repeated words is one of them. So one of the things you ought to be very careful of is not to repeat words, basically, because they take on a life of their own and they start to jar with the reader. So I remember in one book I used nodded a lot and grinned and grimaced, and there are other words I have to literally go through for a search on these and find how many times I've used them. You don't want 78 nods in a book because everybody's like those dogs
nodding off.
You know, the dogs in the back of cars. You know, terrible. Want to try and avoid that. So we all have tics like that. We all have things we repeat just because you're not thinking about it when you're writing. You just want to get the story down in the first draft. Repeat and timeline. I'm really rubbish on time. For some reason, I have this thing, and it's a top tip. It's write the time and the date and the day or whatever is the top of every chapter, so you know where you are in your timeline. So if it's 2 o'clock on Tuesday and it's the 12th of October, put that at the top, and then on every single chapter put that in. And I do that religiously, and then usually when it's being sent into edits or at some stage, I take them all out, and then I have to move everything around. So then, and that's when it all starts to fall apart. So what ends up happening is you suddenly realise that there's a chapter that actually would be much stronger if it was, you know, it's chapter 29, and it'd be much better if it was chapter 40. But when you move it to chapter 40, you discover when everybody's having breakfast in chapter 29, they should be having dinner in chapter 40. So you have to change all those bits then. So there's an awful lot of timeline moving around, and you can get in a right knot. So
Do you have like about 120 post-its up on a big board, I guess?
I also have an amazing copy.
Threaded.
An amazing copy editor. Who looks for the missing days, and he literally checks everything. He checked when I wrote The Dark Room, he made sure that Rachel could leave London and get the ferry to Ireland and then drive across to Cork, because it's set in West Cork, and get to West Cork in the time I had said.
Yes.
So literally she gets into the village within half an hour of when it's possible. And but literally he checks all those details because he knows me and he knows I make mistakes like that. So
yeah, and I guess in crime novels timing can be everything. Were you? Alibis.
It is. And it's like somebody really reader will go, well, that wasn't a 2-minute conversation, and you're like, okay. you literally have to time everything to make sure it's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, you've helped a lot of writers as well, not just that you write yourself, you're brilliant. People have told me that you've been fabulous helping them to get their books out. Is that an amazing thrill for you?
I mean, to find talent in someone and
to help them, because it's when you had your first book ever in your hand, I can imagine, was it just like, oh my God, this is amazing?
Yeah, the moment when somebody hands you your first book. I was actually in Cork. I was in Cork at a festival, and my agent was there too, and he handed me the book. He got it first because it arrived in his office in London. And yeah, to feel it for the first, like look at it for the first time, it's like, this is the thing I made, especially when you've been working on Little Bones I'd worked on for 3 years probably at that stage. So it's lovely. It never gets old. And seeing this new copy of Remember My Name, which will be in the shops next week with its purple edges, that's going to be an Easton's, this special purple edition, and I'm patting it because it's just so lovely.
Of course, that, strolling into Easton's and seeing your books on the shelf, isn't
great.
It? I mean, a lot of people say that's just, it's the joy of that. But and then when the writers then, I mean, you help them, as you said, I suppose, the mentoring process, which you also do.
Yeah.
That really is, I suppose, it's an arduous process, but it must be incredible satisfaction as well.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I do is I run a company called Inkwell, and which is a publishing consultancy. And so I have a whole load of writers who are all best-selling writers who read people's books and critique them. And because they're professional writers, they understand. You can get somebody to read your book and they can say whether they like it or not, but they don't, unless they're a writer, they don't understand why something's not working. So the writers are all able to do these critiques, readers' reports we call them, and they are able to tell you what needs fixing, basically, to just lift it up to the next level. And that's one of the things, as I mentioned earlier, about being a writer, is that you can't see the wood for the trees when you're in a story. You can't see whether everybody's nodding or not, because you are so immersed in the story, and it's very easy to make mistakes. So that's what the readers' reports are invaluable. And back in the day on book three, I'd say, bearing in mind Little Bones was the first one that was published and that was book five, so we're back to book three. A fabulous editor did a reader's report for me and I could see so many things that I was doing wrong, really, and it was so useful. And so that's one of the biggest things that we do, yeah, and it's really, I think it helps people move forward.
Yeah, well, I think just talking to you this evening will be incredibly helpful because I'm listening to things there that, you know, it's like people just think they sit down and they write a book.
Well, that's,
you know,
it, you do.
And it's like, you know, it's, there's so much actually involved, but it's doable. I think that's what I wanted to get from you today. I mean, it is just so doable, of course, so many people have done it, but it's a daunting task for some people. They think, oh, I have a book in me, but how can I get it out there?
The most important thing, and this is the best advice I was ever given, is just keep writing. And so that's it. You just keep writing. As Sarah Webb, who's an amazing author, gave me that advice a long time ago. And I can remember the moment she said it. And literally, that's what I've been doing. And as you, every word you write, you get better. It is about learning all these techniques. I actually run a challenge, a Facebook group. It's a private Facebook group challenge, which is coming up very soon. And so people can sign up for that. And we take them through. It's just a week. And I take them through the process of writing a book, basically. There's only so much you can do in a week, but it's those key techniques. And there's a lot of encouragement. There's a lot of lives of me chatting to them as well through Facebook. And it's a great way of getting that, getting a taste of what it is that you really need to know, because that's the thing I didn't have when I started out. And it took me a long time to figure it out. So.
Yeah. And of course, we mentioned earlier that we would touch on the social media thing just briefly. It has, I suppose, kind of revolutionized. Obviously, you can be in Australia, I can be here in Cork or Dublin or wherever, and we can all be chatting to each other.
Yeah.
That's the good side of it. It's a bit of a two-edged sword as well,
totally,
I guess, isn't
it? At the moment, yes. Some social media sites are utterly toxic. Yes, that's why I like, that's why my writers group, it's called Writers Inc. It actually was on the news there during lockdown because a lot of people were interested in what people were doing in lockdown. So we were on the news. Writers Inc. is a private Facebook group. And we're very careful about who we let in, but we just make sure that everybody's on the same page. So we have a gorgeous group of people and it expands. And we tend to expand it through the challenges. So again, the Facebook challenge is being run, which is basically a week's writing course, if you like, through Facebook too. And again, it's in a private group because I think it's a safe space. And you need to be careful with social media. It's gone, has gone a bit loopy recently.
Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying there as well about just the best advice ever, writing. It's like, I suppose, going to the gym, isn't it? I mean, if you do, you know, would you say to somebody, do, 10 pages a day, or do, you know, what would your advice be in terms of, you know, quantity?
Yeah, well, people talk about writing every day and people talk about thinking, well, you know, you need to do 1,000 or 1,500 words a day. And yes, writing regularly is important, but the most important thing is to fit it in around your life so that you're not too stressed. I think it's very easy in this modern world to set yourself up to fail. And the thing about writing is that you just have to slog away at it and you just have to keep going. But you have to do it when it suits you too. So you have to make the time. There's no question. You will have to sacrifice things. I don't watch the telly. Sarah Webber, she always talks about, you know, when the theme tune of your favourite soap comes on, that's the time you turn it off, the television off, and you sit down and you do the writing. You know, I don't read papers or magazines or whatever. I'm using that time to write. So you do have to sacrifice things.
That's why you're so happy.
Well, absolutely. Keep away from the news. But I think it's, the thing is, you don't beat yourself up. You know, if you can't write every day, don't worry about it, because that time, you know, we were talking earlier about the way the dark room came to me and sitting on the beach and daydreaming and, you know, picking up random ideas. You can only do that if you've got thinking time. And so that thinking time is the plotting time. It's that connecting with your subconscious. And that is absolutely as important as the writing time. Because unless you have the story and you know roughly what it's about, you know, you it's hard to write. So yeah, do definitely spend time writing as much as you can, as often as you can, and even if it's only a little bit, you know, write 100 words a day, write 200 words a day. Joanne Harris, who is amazing, who's a chair of Society of Authors, aims to write, I think, 250 words a day, and she wrote Chocolat, the book that was turned into that magnificent movie.
Oh, wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, and has written loads of books, and literally 250 words a day. She's a professional writer, and anybody can do that. So, and then anything over the 250 is a bonus. You're winning then. So it's,
Wow, this is great sage advice. I'm telling you, this is a little mini masterclass now for listeners tonight. I love it. In terms of the book awards, I want to wish you all the best. Vanessa, the best
Thank
of luck.
So much.
How can people, I mean, I know there's voting process and everything. How can people vote for your wonderful book?
Yeah, it's all down to the public now, guys, everybody out there listening. It is, and you need to go to the irishbookawards.ie website, and all the different shortlists are on there. there from the different categories, and I'm in crime. So if you want to vote for Sam Blake at the Irish Book Awards, it's irishbookawards.ie, and thank you in advance.
Well, Sam Blake, Vanessa O'Loughlin, it's been an absolute pleasure. I could talk to you all night. Wonderful to see you again, and good luck with everything. And thanks so much for being our guest this evening.
Thank you so much for having me.